The Las Vegas Raiders channeled all their emotions from a tough week into a big win, beating the Denver Broncos 34-24 Sunday. And some background on that. It's been a week since Raiders coach John Gruden resigned after leaked emails revealed his racist, homophobic, and misogynistic comments. At that point, many thought the team would roll over and die. Others say it's going to be an uphill battle for the team to regain support from women and other non-traditional fans it's been courting ever since the team announced its move to Las Vegas. But first, that game. Mitch Moss is host of Follow the Money on VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network, and he's covered the NFL for decades as a commentator and analyst. Mitch, welcome back to State of Nevada.
Joe, it's good to talk to you again. How are you?
You too. I'm doing great. Let's talk about yesterday's game. Now, this came after that emotional week. The team lost a coach. They have an interim coach. Analysts were basically saying this team is done. After the game, quarterback Derek Carr said the pain of the week, quote, brought us closer together. And it was a big win. The Denver Broncos are no slouch. But just from how you've seen these sort of things play out in sports, does this last? Do you think the team will be a contender?
Well, okay. So, I mean, you know, I've been watching sports my entire life. I'm in my mid-40s now. I have plenty of examples that I could give you where this is a long-term thing and other examples where it would be a short-term thing. So yesterday in the short term, it certainly worked out. And at this point, I would tell you that, you know, what do we know about the Raiders six games into the season? Well, they are capable of, you know, not only holding their own against some good teams in this league, but beating them. I mean, if you watched football yesterday, I would say that maybe the most impressive or one of the most impressive performances is what Baltimore did to the Chargers. Baltimore was awesome yesterday, and the Chargers came into that game on fire with one of the best offenses in football, best young quarterbacks, et cetera. And it was not a great spot because the Ravens played in a Monday night overtime game at home where they came all the way back from down 22-3. I know I'm rambling with this answer, but I'll get there here in a second. But Baltimore is really good. Guess what? They have five straight wins. Who was their one loss to? Out here against the Las Vegas Raiders. Then on a short week after that, the Raiders traveled to Pittsburgh to take on this mighty defense, and nobody gave them a chance to win that game. And what do? They went on the road to beat Pittsburgh. So back-to-back weeks beating teams like the Ravens and Steelers tells me, you know, this team, they're capable of, you know, again, beating some of the better teams in the NFL. And at 4-2, and the way that Derek Carr, you know, yeah, he's had a clunker or two, and those came in previous weeks to the Chargers and to the Bears last week, but he's like playing at a borderline MVP type level. So, you know, and again, some of the examples that we've seen in the past before, I'll give you one. The Saints in 2006 after Hurricane Katrina, like we didn't know how that team was going to operate after that devastation to that city. And they came out and there was a Monday night game against the Falcons where I don't think any team basically in the history of football was going to go to New Orleans and win that game. The place was absolutely on fire. The team brought their A-plus game, and they ran the Falcons out of the building. Now, that was one short-term game, the first game back at the Superdome since Katrina. But guess what? That lasted the entire season, so things like that can happen.
Are you saying you want to anoint the Raiders Super Bowl winners already?
No, definitely not. But I would say potentially a season-long playoff contender for sure.
I wonder what this says about the players. Bear with me here for a second. As of 2020, 70% of all players in the NFL were black. On the Raiders, it's higher. It's almost 74%. So with that, you have Gruden saying he's not a racist, but then you see those emails, and I'm not going to repeat what they are. People can find them online if they want. I wonder if it matters who's the coach. Or at a point like this, do the players now think we're playing for ourselves? We're playing for us. We're not playing for any coach. And along with that, I wonder if you think a lot of players will try to get out of the team at the end of the year.
Well, I would say this, and now it's something that we can't prove, but you know, maybe there was a maybe the players didn't exactly like the environment with Gruden around there, and they just didn't want to talk about it or indicate that. Because
have you heard that, or you're just a supposition?
No, I'm going to flip it here for a second and say maybe the players would have had, I'm not going to say mass exodus, but maybe the players would have been more willing to leave at the end of the year just because they kind of knew behind the scenes what kind of a coach or a human John Gruden kind of is. And now that he's gone, and I talked to a longtime executive today who's been with the Raiders and His name is Michael Lombardi, and he's won 3 Super Bowls as an executive. And, you know, he said that this could be a long-term thing, and he feels, and from the people that he's talking to, like this could be a big sense of relief for the team, because wow. Gruden did make a lot of this, you know, about himself. And, you know, when it came down to like drafting players, Lombardi pointed out that the organization has like a level of their headquarters set to like, you know, hey, this is our war room. This is what we're going to do. John Gruden had his own level to himself. Like, who does that? What team, what coach would operate like that? That to me is just alarming to hear something like that. So I think, you know, just they can actually take a deep breath now. It's kind of like, you know, a sense of relief that maybe overcame the team. And that's how I'm going to actually look at it.
Okay, so you're talking about it at the players' level. Now I want to look at it maybe from the level of the fans. Team owner Mark Davis has talked a lot about the importance of his father's legacy. That's Al Davis. And Al Davis hired the first black coach in the modern era, the first female executive. His legacy is progressivism, but Mark Davis hired Gruden, $100 million, 10 years. Gruden proved he's anything but progressive. I wonder if the Davis legacy will stand or if fans think it's just lip service.
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, the fact that Davis and the organization evidently had these emails, if you go back, if we can rewind it here now, like about 10 days, when this news broke, I think it came down on the Friday of the previous week before the Bears game, it came out that the Raiders knew more at the time, and they never did anything about that. Like, that's kind of a bad look. Now, they probably, again, I'll speculate here and say that they probably knew what those emails said before they became public. And that's not a good look to allow that coach, if that's the case, to actually go in to the stadium and coach the team that day. And then, you know, I know a lot of other people had a problem with Mark Davis reached out to Steve Wynn and allowed him to light the torch at the stadium. And with his history now, like there's people like in town are just like, what are you doing now? You're going to allow Steve Wynn, knowing what we know about that guy, right, to light the torch. Now you're going to allow John Gruden to coach another game when you probably had all these emails. Like, Mark, come on, you got to clean it up.
Good point on that. Mitch, way beyond the Raiders, I wonder what you think. I'm going to dub this Grudengate. What do you think Grudengate says about the NFL in general?
Like this, are you asking, like, is this commonplace?
Yes.
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, it's a major upset. You know, in those 650,000-plus emails that were leaked, if John Gruden is the only person that gets in trouble, there's a massive cover-up. Like, that's... He's not the only person in the league that would, the other people talk like this, you know, other people, he's not the only person. So, I mean, something's going on behind the scenes here. If John Gruden is the only person that gets caught, you know, in the crosshairs and he loses his job, other people are, going to tell you that this is probably what it's like in a lot of locker rooms, to be honest.
One more thing here, Mitch. Yesterday, Fox News reported that sources say Mark Davis believes the release of those emails about Gruden was an attempt to get rid of Davis as owner of the Raiders. And those emails, as you've noted, they were a handful of about 650,000 emails the NFL is looking at as it investigates allegations of sexual harassment at the Washington NFL team. In NFL circles, are the Raiders an undesirable team, or is Mark Davis seen as you know, a pariah?
I think that people look at Mark Davis kind of as just this goofy character. You know, he's got a strange haircut. He's always wearing like clothes that are not from a guy that would own an NFL team. This is not me talking. This is observations of what other people have said about him. So I actually think that, you know, this is why, and I know it was a long time ago, but who would not want to be a part of this organization? Because look at this stadium, right? $2 billion stadium that is absolutely gorgeous to look at. And if you could go there and play, 8 or this year 9 home games every single year, it'd be incredible. Plus, if I'm a player in the league, this has been a big deal now for many years. How about living in Las Vegas in the state of Nevada where you don't have to pay state taxes? That to me, and I think we've seen this, you know, with the Golden Knights, the desire for hockey players to come here and play for this team and in the city, like that, this has been a talking point, especially like in the NBA, right, where players can on the back end save so much money. Like we're talking about millions of dollars if they play in and live in a state where they don't have taxes, you know, state taxes. That's huge. So to me, this would be one of the most desirable spots to come.
perhaps no other NFL team has been as forward-thinking as the Raiders. The Raiders are the first NFL team to hire a minority head coach, the first to hire a black head coach, and they've hired four minority head coaches, the most in the NFL. Earlier this year, they embraced one of their stars after he announced he's gay. And in Las Vegas, they've made it clear they want to reach out to families, to women, to fans who might not have paid attention to the NFL before. But with Gruden's emails now out there, how do they overcome them? Nancy Lowe is a professor of higher education at UNLV and is also the co-director of the Sports Research and Innovation Initiative. Nancy also works with the Raiders in creating leadership content for the Al Davis Eddie Robinson Leadership Academy. This program improves the representation of minority head coaches in the NFL. Professor Lowe, welcome to State of Nevada.
Thanks, Joe. It's nice to be here.
We're talking a lot here, Professor, about imaging and marketing. What does something like John Gruden's emails do for a team's image or its brand?
Well, you know, this is certainly not something that's easy for any company or any brand to handle. We're in a really interesting time in 2021 where, in fact, the way that social media works, the kinds of comments that have gotten out through the media are then amplified into a whole nother realm. And that makes it really, really challenging from a branding standpoint because you have, of course, folks on social media that are weighing in on how they feel about this. So probably for one of the first times ever in the history of marketing, we're having that direct response come right back to the teams with some immediacy that it hasn't had in the past. So certainly controversy is not anything new to NFL teams and brands, but the way that it gets amplified through social media, the way that fans have more of a say and input during these days is definitely something that's more challenging, I would say, for folks in the marketing realm today.
Yeah, as it's more challenging, how much more difficult is it for the team to separate itself from the actions or words of a coach like John Gruden?
Well, you know, it's difficult. You know, the head coach is so much a part of the image of the team. And so there's no question that, you know, this is going to weigh heavily on the players themselves, how they feel about what was said, because some of them were clearly would have been insulted by the things that were said. And it also, you know, weighs heavily on those that admire these players, right? Look to them, look to the team for leadership. And so I've looked at it as, you know, it's an incredibly difficult and challenging situation, but one that also affords the opportunity for the players, for the brand, for the owner, for the team to say, you know, this is not who we are, and to make some real moves in the direction to show the fans who are they and what do they value.
Give me an example. You know, we had the interim coach, Richie Bisaccia, speak out on the scandal last week. Current players have spoken out about it. In a situation like this, just give me your best shot, I guess. What's the best way to approach this, and how do you potentially win back people you might have just lost in the last week?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so I think what we can look to is examples even from the Black Lives Matter movement. So when that movement first hit and we had, you know, major corporations, brands, teams, a lot of people, you know, joining the movement, putting Black Lives Matter imagery on their websites, on their social media, and saying, you know, we stand with you. That was an interesting gesture that a lot of people paid attention to and said, okay, let's see if you really mean it. Unfortunately, a lot of those corporations, in particular brands, didn't really mean it. They were just doing it in what we call performative ways, which means they put it there just to kind of appease folks and say, yeah, we care. But today's consumers are so much more savvy. They're not going to just take that kind of performative movement, you know, just that one shot, gosh, we're really sorry that this happened, mm-hmm. and believe them and, you know, kind of let them off the hook. This is going to be a situation in which really the team organization is going to have to be strategic in how they go about demonstrating that this is not in line with the values of who they are as an organization. And same thing for the players, that it's not in line with the values of who they are as players. So I guess what I'm saying is there's no quick fix. right? This is an opportunity, as I've said, to educate internally and externally and really come to this point of reckoning with the fact that sports fans are different today. Sports fans are more diverse. The NFL has worked really hard to create a more diverse fan base, to embrace women, to embrace people of all races and ethnicities. And once you've done that, you can't then turn around and say, oh gosh, we don't really care about you folks. We just want you to be NFL fans or Raiders fans. So like I said, it's not a quick fix. There's going to be strategy and very intentional actions that have to take place mm-hmm. to demonstrate what their values really are.
Can you imagine what the Raiders might do to tell their diverse female and LGBTQ fans that they still support them? What would you do?
So I frame it as, you know, opportunity. So right now, I think great example would be Carl Nassib, right? They gave him a day off yesterday, as well they should have. And we're going to be looking at Carl, because we're going to be looking to see, like, you know, how is he doing with this? How does he feel about the organization? And, you know, internally, how is it being handled? And, you know, I know a lot of folks are going to be looking to that game to see, like, how the players respond on the field, so to speak. But it's much bigger than just this week and this immediate situation. You know, Carl has done something that no one has done before in coming out as the first active NFL player to come out as gay. And so, you know, it shouldn't be a burden that he bears. It should be an opportunity for the team, for the organization, to truly demonstrate their support of Carl and other, you know, all of their players. But since he's kind of the beacon in that space of LGBTQ, it's going to be a place where folks will be looking for evidence of how the team really, how the franchise, how the brand really feels about this particular group of people.
The Las Vegas Raiders have some really big decisions to make on where they go next after head coach John Gruden resigned last week. Emails were released demonstrating some misogynistic, homophobic, racist views that he had written some 10 years ago before he was coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. And I'm talking to UNLV Professor of Higher Education Nancy Lowe about some of the possibilities and how this looks from a PR standpoint. Outside of the Raiders, Nancy, some major companies with ties to John Gruden were very quick to cut ties. Skechers won't endorse him. The video game Madden 22 is replacing his character with something more generic. I can imagine moves like this are really costly to those companies, but are those moves important to the consumer?
Yeah, they absolutely are important to the consumer. As I mentioned just a minute ago, Joe, we're in a new era. So folks like you and I, I'm assuming you're probably around my age group, we are not as consumer savvy in the sense of looking at how brands demonstrate that they really care about the consumer. So Gen Z, millennials, those folks right now are so very different in how they look to companies that they decide to be consumers of. I'll give you a great example. If you think about the NFL, most people think, gosh, there's nothing that could possibly get in the way of NFL viewership. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, these young folks aren't watching. There's a lot of sport executives that are trying to figure out, like, how do we get their attention? How do we keep them watching? Because the numbers are going down with regards to the younger generations. They like things in small quantities, right? They consume in a whole different way. Legacy media is not of interest to them. And so what that means is the slightest thing that turns them off, whether it's misogyny, it's sexist or racist language, any of those things can turn them off quickly, and they will just walk away in a heartbeat from that brand, from whatever that offering is. So things like Madden, the video game, things like Skechers, they can't afford to have those young consumers no longer interested in what their offering is. That's a very big hit to any of those brands. So yeah, you're right. It's costly to take an endorser off when you've already, you know, probably invested a lot. Clearly Madden has invested a lot, but at the same time, they've done the math. I can guarantee you they've looked at, you know, what the cost would be to the brand to disenfranchise those groups of people. And it's not worth it.
Yeah, you know, sort of on the flip side, what you're saying implies that the fan base for the NFL are people who are older. They might not agree with progressive causes, and they want the NFL to focus on the NFL, the football only. I wonder if there is a fear of going too far, that you go too far and then you lose that traditional fan base?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. There's no question that, you know, the NFL has become really an American cultural aspect. People grow up learning, you know, which team is going to be their team and creating their fantasy teams with the players. So it certainly is one of our most beloved sports in this country. Very, very American, if you will. And so, yeah, I can completely empathize and understand that your traditional football fan is just, you know, really not one to embrace all of this conversation around things like, you know, race, ethnicity, misogyny, et cetera. But that doesn't mean that that's the direction of the future. These folks, in fact, you know, it's fabulous that they love their football, but times are changing. It's 2021. We're living in a different era. And the reality is we have to, as marketers, as those who are interested in developing a future fan base, we have to look to the younger consumers as much as the older consumers and say, how do we bring them along? Because these younger consumers are the folks that are going to be buying tickets, we hope, for in the next 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. You know, the older consumers are going to age out. We know that. We do the math to figure out how long is someone on our consumer escalator? How can we bring them into higher and higher levels of fan avidity? And, you know, the reality is those folks that are old school football fans, they're an important segment of the overall market, but they're one of many segments that we have to pay attention to when we're building a brand.
What's interesting in this entire saga is that there are still hundreds of thousands of emails of the Washington football program and the team that are still being looked at in this investigation by the NFL. The emails that were released weren't really meant to be seen by the public, but we've seen plenty of cases where a player or a sports professional says something controversial on social media and there is fallout. I wonder if going forward, are you going to see, or even from a public relations standpoint, would you advise teams to do rigorous background checks on people that they hire so that they don't have to fear that the people they hire are going to post something online that causes them all of this grief?
It's an interesting question. I think the thing that we're coming to understand, especially in the sport industry, is that, you know, that approach typically is just not true to the culture of sport. Sport has always been an industry where it's so much about who you know and who knows you. It's very relationship oriented, and football is even more so that way. Some of the research I've done looking at, you know, what do we need to do to improve the representation of Black coaches in the NFL has demonstrated that it's a very closed system. You're either in and you're potentially going to move around and up, or you're out. And that's making it, there are a lot of barriers to entry to getting into football to begin with. So while I might look to something like that as a suggestion, you know, can we do some background checks to see what's, you know, in this person's history? You know, Gruden is a beloved figure within football. He has a long history. There's a lot of people that are his fans and will remain his fans even after this controversy. So would a background check have, you know, brought something to light? I don't know. I think this is more a case of a very bigger systemic issue that is probably going to come to light over the next several weeks, if not months, within the NFL. There are many people pressuring the NFL to release that investigation that's been done on the Washington football team. I know they're resisting with everything they have. They do not want to release that investigation or the information that was disclosed in that investigation, although, of course, the Gruden emails were released or leaked. But if some of that comes to light, I think there will be major fallout in the NFL. There's already conversation today about a high-level NFL executive who is bearing some of the fallout for that Washington Football League investigation. And so, you know, it's early, I think, in this. And this is definitely, the football culture is a culture that has, without question, had very strong ties to some of the behaviors that Gruden expressed. So, you know, for some of us, it wasn't exactly a, I don't know, we will see more through this investigation.
Back to John Gruden for one moment. You mentioned he's beloved in the NFL. He coached the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to a Super Bowl win back in 2002. The Buccaneers just announced they're taking Gruden off of their Ring of Honor at Raymond James Stadium, which brings up this question. Is there anything he can do to improve his image?
Yeah, it's, you know, right now the fallout is growing, right? It isn't going to be a short-term situation for Gruden that he can fix this quickly or easily. This is something that, you know, I think is probably very, very hurtful to him and very, very hurtful to the people who followed him and were fans of his. I know it's hurtful to the players who played under him and didn't see him in the light of the things that have come out through the emails. So it's not going to be a quick fix. You know, can he still have a lasting legacy that's somehow positive? I would imagine that that is possible. You know, there's an awful lot of folks in men in sport who've done very, very controversial things that over time that has faded into the background and they come back into some form of prominence. You know, there's a whole list of those folks we could name off, right? So I think this, it's more for Gruden, it's more a question of how he is going to think about presenting himself in the future, how he will go about crafting his brand in the face of all that this has been. And, you know, I look for him to have the opportunity to come back to some level of respect and prominence if he so chooses. But he clearly will have to demonstrate that the communication that was in the email is not his true character, and that will take some doing.
You're co-director of the Sports Research and Innovation Initiative at UNLV. Your professor, how will you use this study? What will you take from this case to teach your students?
Yeah, I love that question because this, you know, I've said from the beginning, this is an opportunity to educate. And, you know, that's one of the things that we're really trying to do. I started a new sport management program just this year, master's degree at UNLV. And one of the things that we're really focused on is improving the diversity within the sport industry. And we do that through educating more diverse students, but we also do it through educating our students on the aspects of diversity that will help to create a different culture and climate within these sport organizations. You know, some of what was communicated in that email is it's more of a indication of the culture that's been acceptable within the NFL for probably ever. You know, remember, this is an investigation into the Washington football team that leaked this. And there, if you pay attention to what has happened in the culture of the Washington football team, you really see how, you know, there's so much that needs to be done to change the culture, the climate, the organizational complexity, right, as far as who is in that organization and how do we demonstrate value to those people. Women are increasingly working in football. You know, they're part of the male-dominated industry that is sport. More and more women want to work in sport and are working in sport. So that means we have to have a sensitivity and an appreciation for communicating in ways that are not derogatory towards women. And we can say that about every single group, LGBTQ. We can say that about all people from different races and ethnicities. So that kind of locker room culture, as it has been coined, isn't going to fly anymore. You know, it might fly in the locker room, but it's not going to work in the organizational structure in any of these teams, whether it's the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, on down the line. It's a time of change. And that's really what I hope comes of all of this, is that it's an opportunity to begin to educate if they haven't already and to begin to change their practices to create a more inclusive climate, culture, and future for this franchise, but really all of the sport industry.
Las Vegas Raiders made headlines around the world when defensive end Carl Nassib came out in June as the first openly gay NFL player. Of course, the Raiders also made headlines last week when head coach John Gruden resigned after dozens of emails were leaked, some of them containing homophobic language. All of this is happening while the Raiders, known as one of the most progressive teams in the NFL, tries to gain more non-traditional fans. So is it back to square one, or how do they get beyond this with Nevada's LGBTQ+ community? John Waldron is CEO of the Center of Las Vegas, Southern Nevada's LGBTQ+ Community Center. John, welcome back to State of Nevada.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be here representing the center and the LGBTQ community.
It's great to have you, John. I'm going to ask you this first. When you heard, I don't know how big of a football fan you are. I don't even know if you follow the Raiders, but what was your reaction when you found out about these emails?
Well, I think just like everyone else, I was outraged and shocked. And, you know, it's amazing that anybody thinks this way in 2021. But then given the fact that there's no privacy today and how anyone can communicate in this way and expect to have privacy is really strange to think about. But I think as a community, we're just outraged that a community leader would feel this way.
And you're talking about whether or not somebody's a fan or not. Why is this, whether or not you're a fan, why is this important?
Well, it's important anytime that a leader, somebody, a public figure uses language like this, because what it does is it emboldens people who mean us harm. We know that the LGBTQ community, we have folks out there that do mean us harm. And anytime that they can get a leader who supports their point of view and uses provocative and language of that inspires perhaps violence towards us, they're going to gravitate towards that, and it's going to embolden people.
So right now the Raiders they're not really hunkering down. They're coming out and they're saying we do support progressivism, diversity. But in light of those emails, and as someone who works every day for equity and inclusion, what do you want to hear from that team?
Well, we obviously want to hear about real change. We want to hear that the team is going to make the effort to reach out to our community. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, you can't always see the picture when you're stuck in the frame. And that means that you need outside voices. You need people to come in and help. And we want to see that the team's leaders are not going to put this all on Carl Nassib, but are going to reach out to our community and ask for help. And we at the center, we do this every day. We have an expert in LGBT cultural sensitivity, and we go to organizations all over Southern Nevada and do training with the gaming industry, with local political groups, public entities, law enforcement. And we would love to take part in that conversation, to have some courageous conversation around what does this mean for the team and what does the future look like.
John, professional athletes, even coaches, and John Gruden really was one of the most widely known coaches because he was an analyst for Monday Night Football for a long time before he came back into coaching. They could be models to a lot of people. Have you talked to young people about this or other people about this? Or how do you think that kind of conversation might go with somebody who looked up to that organization or that coach?
Well, we talk to young people all the time about this because still today in 2021, it can be challenging to come out and to live as your authentic self. And our young people in the LGBTQ community are looking toward public figures and leaders to be role models and to create safety. Create an environment where it's safe to come out and it's safe to live as your authentic self. You look at some of the things that Major League Baseball has done to show support for the LGBTQ community, and I think there's some lessons learned there for the NFL when all Major League Baseball teams across the country support Spirit Day, which is a day where we all wear purple to support to stand out against bullying of LGBTQ youth. And you look at Major League Baseball, 23 of the 30 teams now have pride celebrations, and even the San Francisco Giants recently wore the pride colors on their sleeves.
But I wonder if you think that would happen in the NFL. It's only been a couple of years when Colin Kaepernick started to kneel at a football game. He was basically blacklisted from the NFL at the time. The NFL, other players started to kneel, and this was for equality, really. It was against police violence. And the NFL kind of put their foot down and said, stop this. A lot of team owners said, stop this. Do you think if they do that just 3 years ago on behalf for that issue, do you think there's much hope for them changing or trying to embrace LGBTQ plus community now?
I do think there's hope. We certainly have a long way to go. Obviously, if what we're seeing with Coach Gruden is existing in the NFL, but there is hope, and I do believe that a situation like this, where things have come to light, it's not only going to encourage people to change; it's going to force people to change because people are going to be held accountable, and our community is certainly going to be watching. And the LGBTQ community is very, very loyal to those we support. And we want to support the Raiders here locally. We want to see the team succeed, and so we will be watching, and we're going to remain hopeful that the team will change, that the NFL will change.
Now, John Waldron, John Gruden's emails were bad enough, and he did really apologize for the content. He simply said he, quote, never meant to hurt anyone. How do you think it helps to get beyond this? Should he explain why they were wrong? And those emails are 10 years old. Should he talk about how his attitudes have changed? What would you want him to say?
I do think that he should be more vocal as far as what he means. It's hard to assess his apology because he's apologizing because he was caught. And so it's hard to know what his genuine character is and whether he has progressed. And I think that expanding on the conversation will allow us to see if there's been a true transformation in the way that he believes.
Earlier this year, the Las Vegas Raiders stood publicly by Carl Nassib. They are the first NFL team to hire a black coach. They've hired more minority head coaches than any other NFL team. And Carl Nassib, who they openly embraced, is the first NFL gay player. And, of course, in this last week or so, after the Gruden emails, team general manager Mike Mayock said the team, quote, always stood for diversity and still does, but is that good enough for fans of a team that has worked really hard to reach out to non-traditional fans? What about those in Las Vegas's LGBTQ plus community? John Waldron is with us. He's CEO of the Center of Las Vegas, which is an organization that supports the LGBTQ plus community. John, let's go back to Carl Nassib, the Raiders defensive end. He took a personal day Wednesday after Gruden's resignation. General manager Mike Mayock said Nassib needed time to process. Again, he remains the only openly gay player in the NFL. I don't know if you could put yourself in his footsteps. What do you think the team would need to do to demonstrate support for him?
Well, first, I appreciated Mike Mayock's comments and support for Carl. This can be incredibly traumatizing for an LGBTQ person, especially when you're the only one who is openly gay right now in the NFL. And, you know, you can imagine that he would be traumatized knowing that the organization that he's loyal to, that he gets out there and gives his all to every day, perhaps has thoughts that are harmful to him and his community. And so I believe that the organization is going to have to work really hard to create conversations around helping him to get through this. And to know that it's not Carl's responsibility to change the organization. The organization, it starts with the leadership. It starts at the top, and they're going to have to make a real effort to reach out to him to help him get through this and help other LGBTQ people know that the Raiders are a safe team that supports diversity and inclusion.
Look, I haven't played in the NFL. You might think I have. I assume you haven't, but I wonder if something like these hurtful emails could potentially discourage other players from coming out. I mean, in other organizations, it doesn't just have to be the NFL. I mean, what is sort of the reaction when this kind of thing happens?
That's one of the greatest challenges for our community when this type of situation happens. We want people to feel safe in coming out and speaking out about who they are. That's a critical part of the mission of the center, is to help people live their authentic lives. And when you see this with public figures, it feels very unsafe to come out and be proud of who you are. And so it's critically important that organizations support very publicly diversity and inclusion to allow others to feel confident in speaking up and being exactly who they were meant to be.
Is there a really good way to teach diversity and equity? I'm sure the NFL has some kind of program. Maybe it's a video. I don't know how they do it. But is there a way that's proven to actually help change people's minds?
Well, I think that absolutely it includes having what I call those courageous conversations, right? Not just reading a book or watching a PowerPoint or something like that, but actually sitting down and having conversations that make people uncomfortable. And that's where it becomes absolutely critical for people to participate in dialogue with the community that they're trying to learn about.